SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from. The Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yama, and welcome to NITV Radio. Bertrand Tungandaminga coming up in your program this Monday, the 21st of October. Like every Monday afternoon, we have some current affairs stories shared with us by NITV's NULA program. Also, last Saturday, October 19, was 100 years since the Kinchala Boys Training Home in Kempsey was founded. The Kinchala Boys Home Boys Training Home was a training home as part of the Stolen Generation. In the program, we'll be joined by Uncle Roger Jarrett, one of the survivors of the notorious home, talking to us about the call for the transformation of this site into a national center for truth-telling and healing, so their story doesn't die with them. We also look at a federal government initiative to address dodgy pricing tactics like hidden fees and hard-to-cancel subscriptions. All these stories and more coming to you after the latest news.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
Bulletin, New South Wales celebrates Aboriginal Languages Week, honouring culture and identity. Qantas ordered to pay $170,000 to three former employees. And King Charles continues his royal visit in Australia with engagements in Canberra. Aboriginal languages in strengthening cultural identity and connection is being celebrated during Aboriginal Languages Week. The second annual celebration in New South Wales showcases the work being done to keep Aboriginal languages alive. The week marks the anniversary of legislation to recognise the importance of Aboriginal languages and establish ways to strengthen them. Yualarai musician and author Nadi Simpson says keeping Aboriginal languages alive honours those who have come before.
The stature of experience and knowing and those three things that we talk about in Yualarai being the ultimate in strength and kindness and generosity. My image of my old people as being giants in those things is exactly how I understand languages, because, you know, if we are the dreaming or we're shaped by the dreaming, that is all-encompassing.
Now, the Transport Workers Union says a federal court decision on compensation for former employers of Qantas over what was found to be an unlawful sacking will allow them to move forward. Qantas sought to overturn a 2021 ruling by the federal court that found the airline had acted unlawfully when it fired 1,700 workers in 2020 during the COVID-19 pandemic and then outsourcing their role to contractors for a lower wage. Justice Michael Lee has handed down his decision on the amount of compensation for three test case employees over the legal breach. He has determined three former workers should be awarded a total of $170,000 over the breach. Different amounts were outlined for each individual for what is called non-economic loss, $30,000, $40,000 and $100,000 respectively.
And today is not just a victory for them. It is not just a victory for the TWU. It is a victory for every working person in this country. And it is also a message to corporate Australia, a message that says, if you treat workers this way, if you think you can get away with the biggest illegal sacking of workers in Australian history, then guess what? Think again. That is not going to happen.
King Charles and Queen Camilla are continuing their royal tour of Australia with engagements in Canberra. The couple will today privately pay their respects at the Australian War Memorial commemorative area, laying a wreath and floral tribute before moving to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Memorial for our country, where the public will be able to see them. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese is also hosting a ceremonial welcome for the royal couple at Parliament House. King Charles says he's enjoying his visit to Australia immensely.
What a great joy it is to come to Australia for the first time as sovereign, and to renew a love of this country and its people, which I have cherished for so long. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for making me feel so very welcome.
The New South Wales government says data shows that its ban on mobile phones in thousands of public school classrooms has delivered results. 12 months on from the implementation of the policy, an education department survey of almost 1,000 public school principals found huge support for the ban, with 95% reporting positive results. The United States is investigating the leak of what appears to be classified U.S. intelligence documents that assess Israel's plans to attack Iran. Two documents were posted to a pro-Iranian Telegram messaging app and first reported by CNN and Axios. The files are attributed to the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency and National Security Agency. A U.S. official has told the AP news agency that documents in question appear to be legitimate. Aid agency Oxfam says six aid workers in Gaza have been killed by Israeli fire in Gaza this week. Bushra Hadidi, a policy lead with Oxfam International, says in the most recent incident, an Israeli airstrike on a shelter in the northern area of Jabalia killed a health worker and a midwife. She adds that four water engineers working in partnership with Oxfam were killed by Israeli fire on Thursday in the Khan Yunis area. Phone and internet connections have been cut since Monday, which has further complicated rescue efforts. Ms. Khalidi says the worsening humanitarian situation is absolute deprivation. Israel has blocked food aid in northern Gaza in the first 2 weeks of October before resuming shipments over last week as Israel's ground offensive continues in Jabalia and other areas of northern Gaza. Over 1.8 million people, or around 86% of Gaza's population, are experiencing crisis levels of hunger, according to a UN-backed assessment. The United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Right of Food On the Rights to Food, Michael Fakhry, says his latest report outlines the systemic nature of starvation tactics used by Israel in Gaza.
This report answers a very specific question. How was Israel able to starve 2.3 million Palestinians in Gaza so quickly and so completely? We have never seen in modern history this speed of starvation. Of course, this doesn't start on October 7th. You can go back multiple points in time. You can go back to 2000, when Israel began blockade against Gaza.
Environmentalists say a United Nations Biodiversity Summit is the best chance to make progress on concrete plans to meet 2030 targets for protecting nature. The goals were agreed upon at last year's summit, with what was hailed as an historic agreement to protect 30% of Earth's land and seas by 2030. Leaders and representatives from nearly every country on earth are gathering in the city of Cali in Colombia for this year's summit, known as COP16. Among the 1,200 delegates are 12,000 delegates are actually 140 government ministers and a dozen heads of state. More than 300 performers have travelled from around the country to perform at Australia's only national competition for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander dance groups. The annual dance competition, called Dance Rights, is a free celebration of First Nations dance, song and culture. 18 dance groups representing more than 40 nations and clans showcased their local storytelling and language. And in sport, Australian boxer Tim Tzu has initially been cleared of any serious trauma but has delayed his return to Australia to recover from his defeat in Florida. Tzu was left heavily concussed after being knocked down 4 times in 3 rounds in the IBF super welterweight bout against Russian Bakram Murtazaliev over the weekend. No Limit box Matt Rose told AAP Tzu's health and welfare must come first before any decisions are made about next steps.
Mate, he's woken up okay. I mean, probably more than anything, because, the mental process of going back to what happened last night. Physically, he's a lot better today. You know, obviously, had concussion last night, but he went to hospital for, we wanted him to go for precautionary reasons. He was okay from that point of view. He'll rest up for a couple of days now.
And now having a look at the weather around the country. Broome, sunny day ahead and a top of 32 degrees. Perth, partly cloudy, 20. Adelaide, mostly sunny, 30. Melbourne, mostly sunny as well and a top of 25. Hobart, cloud clearing, 22. Albury-Wodonga, sunny, 26. Canberra, similar conditions, 24. Wollongong, partly cloudy, 20. Sydney, a possible shower, 21. Newcastle, a shower or 2, 22. Brisbane, mostly sunny, 28. Townsville, partly cloudy, 30. Cairns, mostly sunny, 32. Alice Springs, sunny, 36. Darwin, a shower, 2, and a possible storm, and a top of 34 degrees. And the Torres Strait Islands, a mostly cloudy day ahead, and a top of 30 degrees. And that is an ITV Radio News.
NITV Radio, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1 p.m. or anytime online.
I'm Bertrand Tungandame and you're listening to NITV Radio, coming to you from Nam on the Kulin Nation this Monday afternoon. Still to come in the program, last Saturday, October 19, it was 100 years exactly since the Kinchela Boys Training Home was established in Kempsey. It's a training home as part of the Stolen Generation. To mark the event, survivors of the notorious home called for the transformation of the site into a national center for truth-telling and healing so their story doesn't die with them. To learn more, we spoke to Uncle Roger Jarrett, one of only 49 survivors of this infamous home. On NITV Radio today, we also look at a federal government's initiative to address dodgy pricing tactics like hidden fees and hard-to-cancel subscription. But first, some current affairs stories from a First Nations perspective shared with us by NITV's NOLA program. Last week, we marked 1 year since Australia's failed referendum on an Indigenous voice to Parliament. NITV's Northern Territory correspondent Emma Kellaway spoke with Indigenous Australian Minister Malandiri McCarthy to discuss progress made towards truth and treaty in the years that followed.
Since the referendum, you've said your government is still committed in principle to Makarrata and truth-telling. Will your government take a promise to the next election to establish a Makarrata Commission?
When we saw the weaponisation of Indigenous issues throughout the referendum, it was an incredibly difficult and painful time, especially for many First Nations people, but even ordinary Australians who just don't like that kind of lowering of the debate on a matter that was so important. I certainly don't want to see that happen again.
So no commission?
At this point in time, we are going through a particular process. I do think it's important to listen to people through that process of the Senate inquiry, and I am keen to hear what ordinary Australians have to say in terms of moving our country in any direction. I'm also pleased, though, to see what's happening in Queensland.
And in Queensland, the LNP has promised to axe the Truth-Telling Commission if it wins the state election. Does this show a need for a national-led commission?
Well, I'd certainly urge anyone who takes on the position in Queensland to certainly support Joshua Creamer and the members of the Treaty Commission there. They are doing an amazing job.
And one of your key goals as Minister has been building bipartisanship support for Indigenous affairs and closing the gap measures. With an election just around the corner, have you made any inroads with the Coalition?
Certainly with the Coalition, I encourage Senator Nampajimba Price to take up that invitation. I will be writing to her again for the November sittings, where I'll be holding another gathering of conversations with members across the party aisle on closing the gap.
And Senator, do you have any other reflections on this day, 1 year on from the referendum?
While it was incredibly disappointing, I'm also aware that you know, we are resilient people. We've had plenty of disappointments over decades, if not centuries. And we're not going anywhere. We just keep moving on.
The newly elected Northern Territory government was sworn in at the opening of the 15th Legislative Assembly last week. In its first sitting week, the CLP government has passed legislation to lower the age of criminal responsibility to 10 amidst scrutiny and criticism from legal, health and youth justice experts. It's part of a suite of reforms fast-tracked in Parliament, including an unprecedented expansion of police powers to allow the wanding of students for weapons at school. Emma Killaway reports.
How do you feel about
that? A uniform set to be seen in schools across the territory. The NT Chief Minister eager to boast new legislation that will see students want searched at school.
Excellent, well done.
But the details remain unclear.
This is entirely an operational matter for police and the school principal to work through.
Students will be targeted, with primary schools yet to be excluded.
And it'll be targeted on the intelligence we hold or the information we have about who may be involved in the activity.
Youth advocates quick to respond.
We're not treating children like children anymore. You know, we talked about it being rushed through, and if you don't have the details of what that's going to look like, you know, how can the people across the NT have any faith in that kind of decision?
The jailing of 10-year-olds passed through Parliament late Thursday, a move met by protest.
It's just heartbreaking, soul-destroying. Why would anyone do this?
It's in country, not in court.
It's a chorus of concern that's been building for months.
We're setting young people up for a continued cycle of engagement within the system. We know that the earlier a young person enters the system, the more likely they are to continue that trajectory.
That sentiment echoed inside the chambers by the anti-Labor opposition, now reduced to an all-Indigenous cohort of just 4 MPs.
It is completely counterproductive to put 10 and 11-year-old Territory kids on this path by locking them up when they do something wrong, rather than providing those diversion programs and the support they need to stay out of prison cells and out of the justice system.
Before a final bid by independent members.
Asking, I came here to ask, give us our power back so we can look after our children. We will discipline them.
It's been just over 2 years since NT Labor made the Territory the first jurisdiction in the country to raise the age to 12, a move advocates had spent years calling for.
It is a massive step backwards and fatally flawed in that everyone knows the evidence right across the country, the evidence internationally shows that locking up children does not reduce crime.
A new dawn for politics of the past. Emma Kellaway, NITV News.
The Western Australian government has handed back land to Jiwal native title holders as part of an Indigenous land use agreement with the state government that compensates Jiwal traditional owners for their land rights. Jewel Country, otherwise known as Logan Springs, is between Leinster and Wiluna in WA's Goldfield region. NITV's Karen Cox reports.
Jewel Country in Western Australia's Goldfields region has been handed back under native title. Now the state government has sat down at Logan Springs with Jewel traditional owners to sign over the first parcel of land.
And we hold this very dearly to us, this place here, due to the rock holes, the snake rock, the spring that is Jewel, Logan Springs, and the surrounding area. Yes, it's very, very sacred and to the Jewel people.
The land handback is a significant development for the local traditional owners. They've been waiting to formally manage this country since 2022, when the Jewel Paliakua Land Rights Agreement was reached with the state government.
It is an overwhelming day and a rejoicing day for the Jewel people.
Ultimately, this is about giving land back to the Jewel people as freehold land so they can pursue their aspirations, whether it's culture, social or economic.
Under the land agreement, the Wurundjeri Nature Reserve will be expanded. A new national park will be established, stretching over 109,000 hectares.
We know the Jewel people have a very strong link with this country. It's innate, that connection. They want to care for it. So these agreements, these ILUAs, give the means and the resources for local communities to actually actively care for country.
The state government will spend $19.5 million over 10 years to jointly manage the Jewel Conservation Estate with the Jewel Native Title holders. Seven new jobs will be created, including rangers who will care for the land.
It means that I get to get back out on country and work with the Jewel people and a part of DVCA as well.
A new generation following in their ancestors' footsteps as they care for Jewel country. Karen Cox, NITV News.
We must now step aside for a break, but stay with us because when we come back, we look at a call to transform the Kinchala Boys' home site into a truth-telling and healing centre.
Visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio.
That was Bagilam Bagambaya Birds, also featuring Fred Leone. You're welcome to ITV Radio, talking to you from Nam on the Kulin Nation this Monday afternoon.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Last Saturday, October 19, marked a pivotal moment in Australian history. It was the 100th anniversary of the Kinchala Aboriginal Boys Training Home. In recognition of this milestone, the Kinchala Boys Home Aboriginal Corporation called for the transformation of this site into a national centre for truth-telling and healing, honouring the experiences of those forcibly removed from their families and communities. As Uncle Roger Jarrett says, he's one of the first survivors of the notorious site. He says the call is to ensure the story of this site and its victims is not erased after they have all passed. He says there's only 49 of the victims still alive.
There's only 49 of us left. All the rest of it, originally was 600 that came through this place from 1924 to 1970. And there's only 49 of us left. But we just want to get this place back at Kinchala. It seems weird, I suppose, to some people. But in this home, as a child, you brought here and all your rights are taken away. Your culture, everything's just ripped off you as a child. The staff that was in here was ex-army. And so they just treat us like little white soldiers. We were told we were different. We weren't black, that we were white. If we went into Kempsey and played with the boys at Kempsey High School or seen an Aboriginal person walking down the street, we had to cross the road to the other side and get away from them. We weren't allowed to talk or mix with them at all. If they did find out we didn't, we'd get a flogging when they come back in Kinshaw. It's at home.
That's quite a horrible and very harsh way of living one's life. Do you recall the moment before you were brought into this, hellhole? What was life like before you were brought in, and do you have any recollection of the time before you were brought in there?
Yep, that is hell. On the 25th of June, 1958, a big black English car came up on the mission at Bowerville, and Sergeant Noonan from Bowerville Police Station got out one side, and Mr. Norton, was a welfare bloke, got out the other side. We were living in our Aboriginal housing on the mission. We were going to a Catholic school at Bowerville. We had a house and we had a Dr. Bennett that looked after us, and they charged me with neglect. They come to the front door, sat my mother down, and mother used to go and have a smoke, and they said, Mrs. Jarrett, if you sign these papers, your kids will return within 12 months. Well, before that, Mum was 8 years old by the time the white fellas caught up to her, because Grandfather Sam Dodd-Eye hated the white people. So Mum heard when we come back within 12 months, she did sign the papers. And she did come down to Kinsella within that 12 months to get us out. Coming through the gate, spread a blanket out, and brought some cordial biscuits and lollies in, and we were sitting down inside the home. Me and my two brothers, Kerry and Philip, raced up. And so we're getting out of this bloody hell place. And within an hour, the manager, Frank White, came and said to me, Mum, you have to go. So there's no way she was getting us back again. And I was told to my mother, I said, Mum, please don't come back again, because the pain she had losing us once, let alone twice. What a beautiful, strong mother I had. And in this place was incredible. You come through the gates of Kinsella, and you lose your culture, you lose everything before you come through the gates, and you even lose your name. When I come in here, number 12, and number 12 is engraved into my brain. I can't get it out of my head. You know, if the other people had been tattooed with numbers on it, they'd put a tattoo over them, but we can't. Come into here, they took me to an incinerator, burnt my clothes, and I had second-hand sand shoes that the nuns at Bowerville Convent gave me because I was born crippled at Crindy Beach on the north coast of New South Wales. And back by I was born crippled because we were fauna. We weren't allowed in hospitals. So they couldn't check my mother out. I got trapped up under her ribs, and my feet were turned together, born crippled. And I was very lucky that my father played football for Grafton football team. The white people, they got together and they sent me down at the age of 4 with Mum and Dad, and they had an operation. I had steel braces and I still can't walk properly. In his own, the boys called me Pigeon, and that was my nickname. And at least I had a nickname instead of number 12. And every time I walked around, and them soldiers used to come up behind me and belt me on the back of the head, on the side of the head, and knock me down, because I wasn't walking like a little white soldier. They'd sit down and have a meal, and they'd all have a talk and say, number 12, we've got to make him walk like a little white soldier. So then they'd all get on the bandwagon, and you'd be getting belted from left, right, and centre. And we never had any shoes in here after I burnt my sand shoes. They took me down to, they shaved me hair bald, took me down to a shower block, gave me a scrubbing brush and a cake of sand soap, not to scrub yourself with that. And you're cutting your skin and everything with scrubbing yourself. They gave you a towel to wipe yourself dry again. When you wipe yourself dry, you cover your eyes and your mouth over, and they threw this white powder on you, and you weren't allowed to wipe that white powder off. And I thought we must have had fleas, and you couldn't wipe it off, it just itched. Anyway, they marched us round to a storeroom on the side of the home where they had square pigeonholes. In them pigeonholes had all had numbers on it. When I come into here, the bloke that was in here was number 12. His clothes were rags. And they gave me his clothes. An 11-year-old skinny little black fella. And this man that went out, nearly 19-year-old, he was programmed in here and made to work for white people out in stops and stations as a labourer. Laid his clothes and I had to tie a string around his trousers to hold them up. And they were holes and ragged out. They never had a storeroom in Kinsler where they can give you clothes that fitted you. So they measured me up and 4 months later, I'd got clothes that fitted me. In this place were all ex-army. And I remember each and every one of those staff because they all bloody belted me as a child because I couldn't walk like a little white soldier. The manager's name in 1958 was Frank White. And they had a sergeant, Grenadier Guards, John Purvis, had a big moustache in his toilet. And there was Harry Burns. He was a medic, white fellow from in the army. And there was Billy Dodds, which was a pretty good bloke. He was more sympathetic than the others. And the two cooks in here, Mr. Bilby, Mr. Stewart, ex-army, they lived in Jerseyville. And the maintenance bloke was Mr. Cooper. He's a local around Southwest Rocks. And Mr. Scott was the bloke that taught us how to milk cows, dig up paddocks, plant produce for white to sell. And with no shoes and your rags that you had on, in the wintertime, the grass is all full of frost. And you used to crack your feet all the way up to your trousers. Your skin would just crack. And when you got in the cold shower, it just burned. And because I couldn't wear shoes, I had to kick my toes, and I cannot today still grow toenails on my feet. And as you walk around through the grass, your toes get caught in the grass, and they rip your feet. And the food in this place was substandard. They had galvanised garbage tins back in 1958, and the galvanised garbage tins weren't airtight. In one, they had spaghetti and macaroni with a little black wheel that get in there and multiply by the millions, eating all the macaroni and spaghetti. When they cooked that up, it come with a little weevil. And you have to eat that bowl of food until you clean the bottom of the plate out because they keep giving it to you until you ate it. In the breakfast cereals, we had porridge and wheat bix. And a little moth and fly in there because we weren't airtight. And lay millions of little grubs. But when them grubs were cooked up, they went stiff and they had little spikes on them. And when you ate the porridge and wheat bix, they'd be caught in your throat, trying to swallow them down. So that was part of the food. And we never had any birthdays in this place, never even had any Christmases. And we had a dairy out the back. And as you went to high school, well, we had a primary school there with Mr. Telford. He was a teacher trying to teach us about sums and maths and everything else. But as a child being traumatised, you look at a blackboard and it's all scribbled. You cannot learn. By the time I was nearly 13, I went to high school and I went to 1H. Now, you go from A down to H, it's a long way down. And there's a fair few of us brothers there. We just could not learn.
That was Uncle Roger Jarrett, one of the few survivors of the Kinchala Boys Training Home. We must now go to a break. When we come back, we continue the conversation, looking into how there's a call to have this site turned into a truth-telling and healing centre. Stay tuned.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. Now we continue our conversation with Uncle Roger, talking about life in the notorious Kinchala Boys Home as the site turned 100 years on Saturday. The home was dubbed as a training home, but the conditions and purposes of the home were actually akin to modern-day slavery. Among the guests at the ceremony marking the 100 years was the New South Wales Anti-Slavery Commissioner and many other community and state leaders.
Well, we got the, what they call it, the Federal Minister, coming here tomorrow and other dignitaries through the government that are coming here tomorrow. And we've got one pretty good on with the federal minister. He already spoke in Kinchla and Canberra about Kinchla. We're trying to get this place back because as a child, when you come in here, all your rights are taken away, even your heart and your love is buried in this place. You're formed in submission. You couldn't talk. You couldn't do nothing. You know what I mean? So they're just ruled like in a bloody iron fist as a child. With their support for being government, because we're having trouble with the local Dungaddy Land Council of getting this place back. We offered them a sum of money for it, but we had heard nothing back, and they want to amalgamate with us. But we want to turn this into an healing centre, a truth-telling place. It is World Heritage listed, the Kinchla Boys' home. And a lot of the boys have died now. I wish we had the healing centre at the back where they could have come in here and stayed with the brothers. We are brothers, and when we get together, we are still the family that we knew as kids. You know what I mean? We look at our own biological family, brothers and sisters and that, and it's like looking at a stranger. It's hard to explain, but I can spell love, write love, but I wouldn't have a clue what bloody love is.
Yeah.
Even though I've been married 58 years to a non-Indigenous girl, a white girl, I come back to Barrow of a mission and I was supposed to marry a girl named Elaine Walker. But by the time I got back from being taken to Kinchla, down to Sydney to work washing dishes and making toast, to back to the Barrow of a mission, they said, "Nev, your bloodline's too thin. Go away to Sydney and find a woman down there." So I've been married 58 years to a non-Indigenous girl, a white girl, a lovely girl. For put up with me, she must be something special because my head space wasn't the right space.
But you're really strong and resilient and despite a very tough and difficult start in life that was thrown at you, not something you chose, but something that was imposed on you, you managed to actually go and make a living in Sydney, yeah, despite very, very difficult beginnings imposed on you.
Well, in Sydney, I worked at a PMG hostel where they got white kids down to make them linesmen and technicians. I get 10 quid a week. And then eventually the brother-in-law worked at Simon's Carpets at Lidcombe. And they were doing a stop take with it. I'll short ends of carpet out and measure them. And by that time, I was a father at the age of 17. I come out. I had no parental guidance. I didn't know how to be an husband. I didn't know how to be a father. That was all taken away. Anyway, he said, "Do I want to get spare money?" So I went and done some work with him at Simon's Carpets at Lidcombe. And I must have did a good job because Les Simons was the owner. He offered me a job there for £19 a week, and I was only getting 10. And I said, "Yes, I've got to buy nappies, I've got to buy formulas, I've got to buy cots, I've got to buy my kids' clothes." So I took the job, and I started there sweeping floors and, you know, doing cutting carpets and underfelt and make it ready for the carpet layers. On the weekend, I did single rooms, which I got all the knee kickers and all the stuff I needed to do the job. Now I am a resilient floor layer. I can go out and I can wait commercial vinyl in hospitals. I've got a bus driver's license to drive our bus. And I can do parquetry, carpet, vinyl, a lot. And we're getting this place back, Kinchla, to turn it into that place. We can teach the young kids that come out of jail. When they come out of jail, they've got a record. They cannot get a job in the white society because they've got a criminal record. We're going to approach the government and get under our care and teach them how to do these things. I've got one idea I want to do because the river's up here. When we're here, a ship used to come up here and go all the way up to Kempsey, a ship from out the ocean. Now you can't even get a little dinghy up there. It's that wide, and that seals it up. I only get a flat bottom punt to put out in the river, have a hydraulic grabber and a camera going down and clean the rivers out, clean all the debris out, take it back, put it on a bank, recycle the metals back, and then get a dredge in, GPS a couple of kilometres of the river, pump all the soil out, make it deeper, and then what we dredge out, put it on a bank. Within a month, hopefully, the salt will leach out of the mud and we can spread that back on the banks and get rocks and build the river smaller but deeper. And also, that's the young ones that come out of jail. White, black, doesn't matter. You know, and we'll take them under our wing and do it. But we've got to get this place back and we can teach them in trades. Also, what we want to do is clean this country up. It's like a garbage tip. There's lantana, which a woman brought us from Holland as a pot plant. Even the goats won't eat that lantana. And within that jail system, when they come out and they got a record, they can come and start cutting lantana. They pull it out, burn it, and put Australia back to a beautiful country, which it was. We have the qualifications to do all that. All we need is to get this place back and we can start it. But we're having trouble with the Land Council. And as I said, hopefully with the ministers and all that coming down here, they may be able to persuade, you know what I mean, for us to get it back. And because if you get a positive wage on the Friday, the father can buy his kids shoes, bikes, anything. At the moment, the little black fellow will go out and see the white fellow with the nice shoes on, and he steal. And he see the bike, and he steal the bike, because the father's got no job, he's on the dole. Now, if he get a regular wage on a Friday, he can buy them for his kids, and it'll change the old meaning of being segregated, being poor as Aboriginal people.
Are you in contact with the other uncles, the other survivors, and how are they?
They're all the brothers up here now that started to come in, yes, definitely. And when we get together, we cover each other because we are brothers. It's a hard thing to say. It's like if you got a family and you go to your family and you know their biological family, you got that love there. Well, we got love for each other, because we were brought up as brothers in this home. And to see our biological family, there's no love there. They're just like strangers. It's a funny thing to say, but this is true as I'm sitting here. And all the brothers are coming up now for their son's anniversary.
Now, before I let you go, anything you'd like to add, maybe a message you'd like to send to the community out there? Because this is a very important day, and hopefully things will go your way and the place will be really turned into a truth-telling center as is requested, and a place of healing, just the way you described it. But any other information you'd like to share with us?
I'd like us all to become one family. We are all from this earth. Every molecule of your body, your concrete, metal, steel, lot, we come from the earth, the mother. Now, from the Mother Earth, we all come. I would like to get the English law, which was made back in the 1400s, to protect the rich people. Get that law and give it back to Charlie, the king that they call king, giving that law back. And us get together as a family, because we live off this earth. We are human beings, to become one family, and we can make our own law, which will all be equal. And we've got people at the moment sleeping in streets and cars, and we have to fix that. And the only way we can fix it is us Indigenous people doing this and showing the white people how it can be done. And we can do it. We've been here. We are the oldest continual living human beings on this earth. This is the oldest continent on the earth. So we've survived for millions of years. Or whatever it is anyway, so we can lead the way. We just need that help to get the land back and to start these things in process. I'm 77, and I'd like to see that I've achieved in my life by coming back here, owning this place, and teaching our people and any other one that want to come and learn trades to clean up this country. That'd be more than welcome. I want to thank you for letting me have a say on behalf of the brothers. Thank you.
NITV Radio, on radio, online and mobile.
Now, the story of Uncle Roger will be published on our website shortly after the program this afternoon.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Now, the federal government is moving to address dodgy pricing tactics like hidden fees and hard-to-cancel subscriptions. Businesses like gyms, airlines, online retailers and ticketing companies are in the spotlight as the government looks to stamp out potentially harmful practices not already forbidden under consumer laws. Ciara Haynes reports.
Subscription traps and hidden fees added throughout the checkout process. It's something some people have been forced to accept as normal.
I think it's a little unfair, yeah. But at the end of the day, they have the power. We can't really do anything.
Dynamic pricing, which sees the cost of goods like concert tickets inflated based on demand. And deceptive online practices, which include time limits on purchases designed to overwhelm people. Rosie Thomas is the spokeswoman for Consumer Group Choice. She says these are unfair business practices taking advantage of customers.
Consumers are incredibly frustrated by the range of sneaky tactics that businesses use to trick us to spend more money. Whether it's gym memberships that are impossible to cancel, dynamic online ticket pricing, or the checkbox that's pre-checked that adds cost at the checkout, sometimes without you noticing. All of these practices are unfair business practices.
Now the federal government is moving to make these tactics illegal. But data from the consumer group suggests these are laws 1 in 10 Australians thought were already in place. And similar legislation is keeping businesses in the UK, Europe and the US in check. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says he's prepared to implement this kind of legislation in Australia.
Now what we want to make sure is that there's transparency. And that these unfair practices and dodgy deals are outlawed. That's why we're providing additional funding for the ACCC. That's why we're prepared to legislate. This is a part of easing the cost of living for Australians.
But it won't be instant relief for those affected by the tactics, with the Federal Treasury tasked with drawing up the plan with states and territories. Federal Assistant Treasurer Stephen Jones says draft laws are expected to be ready in the first half of next year.
Businesses don't have to wait for the government to change the law. They can change their practices immediately. Surge pricing, that's not essential. That's a choice they make. Subscription traps, that's not essential. That's a choice businesses are making. Drip pricing, that's not essential. That's a choice that businesses are making. They're unfair to consumers and they've got to stop.
But before that improved regulation is legislated, Ms. Thomas says consumers can still call out dodgy dealings through advocacy groups or even social media.
We'd always encourage consumers to let Choice know what they're seeing if there are unfair business practices. They can also take to social media because sometimes the public naming and shaming is all that businesses need to reconsider their practices and change what they're doing.
Kira Hain, SBS News.
Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio.
And that's all from us on NITV Radio this Monday afternoon. I'm Bertrand Tungandame, thanking you for your company today. Till next time, bye for now. Leaving you with Two Step by Ed Sheeran. You know you take all of my stress right down. Help me get it off my chest and out. Into the ether with the rest of this mess that just keeps us depressed. We forget that we're here right now.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes.
Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.